All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my thoughts, my reaction to the Falcons' release of kicker Matt Bryant, as well as defensive end Brooks Reed.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com. Been on Twitter for a long time, at FalcFans. And, of course, the longtime, illustrious host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the cuts of Matt Bryant and Brooks Reed. Instead of talking about the edge rushers from the Falcons 2018 season. Because these cuts keep coming out piecemeal by the Falcons. You know, keep having to react to these things as opposed to continuing our roster review series. So hopefully tomorrow the Falcons will let me do my edge rusher review so I can talk about Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley and Bruce Irvin. I guess I can talk about Brooks Reed today instead of doing that on tomorrow's episode. But you never know. Maybe the Falcons are going to cut somebody else, Ryan Schrader or somebody else that I'm going to have to react to and thus punt that and make this roster review series instead of getting it wrapped up next week. Like originally I thought I would. It's going to bleed into the week after that. So we'll see how it goes. But without much further ado, let's get into it talking about Matt Bryant, and let's talk about the positives of Matt Bryant, not the positives of this move. We'll get there, definitely. Spoiler alert, Aaron's not happy. But let's talk about the positives of Matt Bryant. Football Outsiders did a study a couple of years ago in 2015 looking back at all their kicking data going back decades and came to the conclusion that Matt Bryant was the greatest clutch kicker of all time. I certainly don't think anything he has done over the last, three seasons since they did that study probably will change that data. You know, I think you look at some data that indicate, obviously he made, 95% of his kicks this year, 96% of his kicks this year, missed only one kick this season. And you can make an argument that he was still one of the premier kickers in the league. In 2018, still operating at that elite level. I saw someone put up a stat, at the beginning of this month, sort of looking at field goal kickers and their, the percentage that they made based off of the expectation that they would have, I assume based off of distance and potentially maybe venue or whatnot. And Matt Bryant, in terms of his expected field goal accuracy was supposed to be around 80%. And of course he made 95% of his kicks, and the 15% difference is the highest in the league. And so again, that's one of those things. If you can sort of look at, accuracy above expectation as sort of one of those advanced kicking metrics that you can have, then he would have been, the best kicker in the league in 2018. I think he was the fourth highest rated field goal kicker according to Pro Football Focus. Let me double check that real quick. Yeah, the fourth highest rated behind Aldrick Rosas, Will Lutz, and Justin Tucker. And what I will say about Matt Bryant is, the thing about kickers is they don't get a lot of love from Hall of Fame voters, special teams guys in general. I think there's maybe three, maybe four kickers in the Hall of Fame now. I think there's one punter. There's no returners. Maybe Devin Hester will change that in a couple of years. And there's no cover guys, because I know there's been a push by some people to try to get former Buffalo Bills wide receiver Steve Tasker enshrined as of late. So kickers aren't necessarily viewed in the same way that position players, whether a quarterback or a tight end or linebacker or whatnot. So I don't necessarily know if we will say, Matt Bryant is a future Hall of Famer for that reason. But if you just simply look at his resume and don't adjust for the position that he plays, he 100% has a Hall of Fame resume. His consistency for as long as he has done it is virtually unprecedented. Again, the Football Outsiders metric. And it's interesting. Again, he's only been to one Pro Bowl, I think, back in 2016. And, in large part due to the fact that, generally speaking, I don't know how it still is, because, again, I don't pay attention to the Pro Bowl, but it used to be that whoever was the kicker on the best offense in the league and basically had the most points in the league, which generally is more due to how many extra points you kick than necessarily how many field goals you kick, would often make the Pro Bowl, as opposed to the guy who's legitimately the best kicker in the league. And I think that's one of the reasons why Matt Bryant hasn't necessarily been to more Pro Bowls than he ultimately have. But his consistency, particularly in those clutch situations, is unprecedented. So I wanted to say all that sort of to talk about his legacy. And some of that is one of the reasons why this move I'm not thrilled about. I certainly think you can make a sort of a cold, logical reason for what it is. And certainly some people on Twitter, a very interesting minority of people on Twitter, made that logic. The vast majority of people on Twitter seem to be comparably, I won't say equally, but comparably appalled as I was with this sort of this move and somewhat the timing. You know, I'll sort of come back and we'll make the case for the cold logic in a moment. But before we get there, I want to let you guys know that the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network is going to be going live for the NBA trade deadline special on Thursday. That is today, as you're listening to this at 1:30 Eastern, live on YouTube on the Fantasy Basketball channel. It's going to be hosted by David Locke of Locked On Jazz, as well as fantasy expert Josh Lloyd, plus all the local experts on the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network. There's going to be breakdowns of all the deals, giving you a fantasy perspective, and have all the angles from all 30 NBA teams. Again, it starts Thursday, today, 1:30 Eastern time, 90 minutes before the trade deadline on the Locked On Fantasy Basketball channel on YouTube. So when it comes to sort of looking at the cold logic involved in this move, you know, I think it makes sense that there is some cold logic to it. You know, you look at a guy like Giorgio Tavecchio, who, you know, in three games made all five of his field goals, all of his PATs. I mean, maybe you can make the case that Matt Bryant was on the decline because he missed two extra points this year, which is one more than he had missed in the previous nine seasons combined. But, you know, I think that's a pretty flimsy argument. But, like, the cold logic, I think, behind sort of going with Giorgio Tavecchio is given that Tavecchio basically for every dollar that Matt Bryant was going to count in terms of his salary cap this year, over $4 million, and Giorgio Tavecchio counting just shy of $700,000, basically Giorgio Tavecchio is making 15 cents on the dollar in comparison to Matt Bryant. And so if the argument is if Giorgio Tavecchio can give you 75% the production, even a figure as low as 75%, and you can make a case that maybe that number would be significantly higher based off of a limited sample size that we saw in 2018. If you're getting 75% or 80% to production for 15% to price, of course it makes more sense to go with the cheaper option. That's the more financially sensible option, and sort of, you know, that makes a lot of sense in that regard. I think you also could make a case that given the fact that the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is a beneficial venue for kickers, as Jim Nantz put it in the Super Bowl. I believe he said no kicker had missed a kick in Mercedes-Benz Stadium until, you know, whoever missed the kick in the Super Bowl, Gostkowski, I think it was, or Zerline, I can't remember who it was. That game was very forgettable. I will not remember a single thing from that game other than one Jared Goff interception and that pass breakup by McCourty in the end zone. And I couldn't even tell you which McCourty it was. It was one of the McCourtys. But anyway, side note. But because Atlanta is such a kicker-friendly venue, that being able to find a cheaper player that can at least perform at a pretty high level, maybe not as high as Matt Bryant, at least as far as sort of the clutch kicking goes, but certainly, you know, the other factors of being a kicker makes a lot of sense. You know, but for that reason, I wasn't really that worried about the future of the kicking position. Like, that was one of the interesting nuggets that the Falcons brass said today when they announced the release of Matt Bryant after he announced his cut on Twitter, which was that, you know, they were like, this is going to be something that's something along the lines, is this going to help us move forward for the future of our team in like 2019 or something like that. And for me, it was like, why are you worried about the future with the kicker, because you know that when Matt Bryant, when the wheels fall off of Matt Bryant, and people have been predicting that the wheels would fall off for him for like 5 years, and they haven't yet fallen off for him. And I don't think there's any reason to think that that's going to happen in 2019 or even 2020. Because of that, like when you decided to go out and get a new kicker, it wouldn't have been that hard to get a new kicker. And so this notion that like, well, we got a good kicker now and we can't let him go. It's like, why? I don't understand that. And so part of the other reason why the cold logic doesn't necessarily work for me is like, because this team, like some people are like, oh yeah, this is like a Patriot move. And like, yeah, even though I have been certainly in the past times more, you know, advocating the Falcons act more like the Patriots than, you know, and then they often do, you know, I'm not going to get into some of the terrible decisions the Patriots have made using cold logic, but like, it's just kind of incongruous, I guess, in terms of how the Falcons sort of apply that logic. Like they're like, oh, we're not that type of organization and we believe in people and whatnot. And we're very player friendly. And then, you know, situations like this, where really the justification for cutting Matt Bryant is to basically save a little shy of $3 million, just doesn't make any sense. Because again, it's not as if he was a player on the prime. And I just felt like the way what Matt Bryant has given us over the last decade is he had become one of these rare players that I think deserved the opportunity to retire when he wanted to retire. And as he mentioned on Twitter on Tuesday evening, that he has no intention of retiring. You're already seeing, you know, ESPN's Vaughn McClure connecting the dots between Matt Bryant returning to Tampa Bay, where Keith Armstrong's now the special teams coach, and where Matt Bryant's career sort of began. And certainly, you know, based off of his wife's Twitter words, she didn't necessarily mince her words with some of the things she directed at the Atlanta Falcons organization. I don't blame her one bit. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people were sort of upset, because it just seemed like he was one of those guys where it's like there's going to be a point in the future, you know, whether it's 5 years or 7 years from now, potentially, where Matt Ryan, the Falcons' beloved quarterback and arguably the best player that ever put on a Falcons uniform, may not be good. Like, he might go the way of Carson Palmer. And, you know, at that position, at that quarterback position, or like you see it with sort of with Eli Manning these last 5 years in New York, where it's like at a certain point you got to kind of move on if the guy's not getting the job done, particularly at that position. But in the case of like a guy like Matt Bryant, like he's still getting it done, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And you know, the other part of it is what's frustrating about it is like it doesn't seem like the Falcons are going to use that same sort of cold logic elsewhere on the roster when it comes to purging certain players that may or may not be getting paid too much money. You know, the $2.8 million in savings that the Falcons got from Matt Bryant, and, or even if the Falcons designate this as a post-June 1 cut come March and save $3.5 million, oh, they got another $700,000 of cap space in June. Great, you know, but let's assume for now, again, I pray to God that this is not a post-June 1 cut, because then it's like, why? Like, that would make even less sense, but let's just remove that from my head. Now I'm getting really upset if that's the case. But the $2.8 million that the Falcons save, they could save over $17 million by cutting Mohamed Sanu and Vic Beasley. And unlike Matt Bryant, you know, as you guys can probably guess, and or have also heard me to say and argue in the past, like, those guys aren't elite players. You know, Mohamed Sanu's basically the number three receiver on a team that doesn't use three wide receiver sets. Vic Beasley is a vastly underachieving pass rusher, you know, on a team that basically found a guy off the street in the name of Bruce Irvin that was better than him. And as we'll talk about later on in this episode when we get to Brooks Reed, had a player in the name of Brooks Reed that was better than him the last couple of seasons. You know, I've been known to sort of put my foot in my mouth a little bit by overreacting to things a little bit too early, but, you know, are the Falcons going to cut those two guys? Because if they're being the cold logical team now, like, makes way more sense in my eyes to, the logic makes way more sense to cut those two guys versus Matt Bryant. You know, so that's part of my added frustration, where I'm sitting here knowing or believing that the Falcons are going to keep both of those guys and get rid of, you know, again, a Hall of Fame kicker who's still kicking at a Hall of Fame level. You know, so that's part of my frustration with the whole move. But look, you know, this is, you know, one hopes that the Falcons, you know, that this is not going to have a dramatic impact on their season for the time to come. I do like Giorgio Tavecchio. I do. I liked him when he was in Oakland, you know, as a guy that has secretly rooted for the Raiders since 2002, since I was a freshman in college, and the tuck rule game, basically. You know, Giorgio's time sort of as a replacement for Janikowski, another guy who was a longtime hero in Oakland, you know, maybe he can do it twice and then the Raiders decide to get rid of him. But, you know, part of it is a little bit too, like, I think people, like, were willing, particularly earlier this season, seemed a little bit too eager to turn the page on Matt Bryant when, you know, Tavecchio made those kicks, you know, and sort of calling him Italian Ice. It's a cool nickname, but, like, to me, one clutch kick against the Giants doesn't automatically earn you a cool nickname, like Money, who did it time and time again. Like, for me, at least, you know, and I'll die on this hill or whatever you want to say. I'll be on this island alone. But, like, his nickname to me, until he earns the right to be called Ice in terms of his coolness under pressure, you know, one clutch kick doesn't earn you the nickname Ice. That's as far as I know. His nickname to me is going to be Il Mancino, which means the lefty in Italian. So I will hereafter refer to him as Il Mancino. Let's see him make it through an entire season. Let's see him make a couple of clutch kicks in 2019. And then maybe I'll start calling him Italian Ice in 2020. But until then, like, the disrespect. I don't get it, man. Like, just people are like, oh, yeah, we got a new kicker now. Like, look, I like Tavecchio, but not at the expense of Matt Bryant. Matt Bryant should have been allowed to retire a Falcon. He should have, you know, if there was a time in the future where his play dropped off, which, again, wasn't now, then maybe the Falcons could have thought about moving on. But for me, at least, and like another thing that people said to me on Twitter today was like, oh, didn't you see this on the writing on the wall? Not really. Sort of, you know, my expectation was the reason why they gave Il Mancino a 2-year contract was as an insurance policy in the event that Matt Bryant did retire after the season, because the Falcons didn't know back in October or November whether or not that was going to be the case. And so when Tuesday night, when I saw Matt Bryant tweet out that he was coming back, he planned on playing, and unbeknownst to us, that was probably right before he found out that he was not going to play for the Falcons again. I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, they're going to keep Matt Bryant. They'll carry Tavecchio for however long they can. If they can trade him, you know, come August or whatever, you know, for a conditional pick or something like that, get a draft pick out of it. You keep your elite kicker, you trade a guy or whatnot, or you just keep him as an insurance policy. You never know. Matt Bryant could have a change of heart come July or August, or have another injury or something like that in training camp that causes you to be like, okay, well, maybe we do need to carry two kickers. You never know. Again, there's nothing hurting the Falcons by carrying two kickers. They, you know, signed a second kicker as an undrafted free agent for pretty much every offseason the last like 4 or 5 years. You know, having two kickers on the roster isn't a crime. You know, maybe in October it is, but certainly not in June, July, and August. So that was sort of what I thought they were going to do. And then they zigged when you thought they were going to zag, as the Falcons often do. And there was a part of me that sort of thought, I'm rambling at this point. We'll get to Brooks Reed in a second, but I do want to make this last point. There was a part of me when the Falcons fired Keith Armstrong that sort of thought, oh, they got a new special teams coach. Maybe they'll start completely fresh on special teams, and maybe that does mean Matt Bryant and guys like Bosher might get cut. And then I thought about it, and I was like, well, that would be stupid. Like, why? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And so I just kind of dismissed it. And so that's part of the reason why myself, and I'm sure many others, are upset, because it was just so unexpected. And unlike a guy like Schrader, unlike a guy like Reeds, unlike a guy like Alford, who we've kind of known at least for a couple of months now that the writing was on the wall, you've had time to sort of process it. Like, the Alford cut, you know, happening on the day it did snuck up on you, but you knew it was a strong, if not certainty, that a strong possibility, if not a certainty, that it was going to happen eventually over the next month. Same thing with Schrader. Same thing with Brooks Reed. Same thing potentially with Brandon Fusco. But this Bryant cut seemed to come out of nowhere, and particularly so shortly after learning that Matt Bryant's going to keep playing. It's like, oh, okay, we still got our kicker again, and just sort of had the rug pulled out from under you so quickly after that. It's just very upsetting. But that being said, let's get to Brooks Reed. But before we get there, I want to let you guys know about the Locked On NFL podcast with host Matt Williamson, who's still having great guests join him every day on that show to bring you all the great juicy news from around the NFL. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So let's talk about Brooks Reed. And similarly to what it was with Robert Alford, this is a pro Brooks Reed podcast. That spin move is enshrined in the Locked On Falcons podcast Hall of Fame. You know, Brooks Reed is a player that I came to really appreciate in 2016 and 2017 because he stepped up as he did in 2016 when Adrian Claiborne got hurt, and then continued to play at a pretty high level in 2017 when, you know, at least based off of Pro Football Focus grades, you could make the argument that he was the best backup defensive end in the entire league. You know, he's coming off of a down 2018, basically father time, as he always does, you know, rears his ugly head. And Brooks Reed's coming off a down season, still made some positives against the run, not to the same degree that he did the previous year in 2017, but mostly his pass rushing, you know, I won't say fell off a cliff, but, you know, basically tumbled down a steep incline. And so he wasn't really contributing there in the same ways that he had done in the previous year and a half. And so it sort of became inevitable that the Falcons would move on from him. Again, as I've suggested previously on the podcast, there's probably a chance that the Falcons after the draft could try to bring him back at a cheaper deal, depending on how the next couple of months go, if they can sort of solve whatever their edge rush needs are, and add a couple of players at that DN spot to replace Reed and potentially Irvin, and, you know, on the off chance that they do decide to part ways with Beasley, to sort of fulfill their needs there. And if they don't successfully do that in free agency and in the draft, then, you know, there's a chance that Brooks Reed is still unemployed come May, that the Falcons may, you know, reach out to him and say, you know what, here's a veteran minimum deal, Brooks, do you want to come back? And I think, you know, by then, at that point, you know, if Brooks Reed wants to continue playing football, beggars can't be choosers at that point. And the Falcons could potentially do a lot worse than sort of Brooks Reed at that point as well. So that's a possibility, but I would sit here and say that sitting here today, that's seemingly doubtful at this point, given sort of the momentum that the Falcons seem to be going in this offseason, seemingly with these moves, with the idea of sort of purging some guys so that they can get that necessary cap space. Although, again, we'll see if they purge other players where they could get significantly more cap space, six times as much as they created by getting Matt Bryant. I'm not bitter at all. No, not at all. Let's go back to Brooks Reed. I think the interesting thing about Brooks Reed is, for me, I think Brooks Reed was not a particularly popular player among our fan base. And I think for pretty much consistently the last 3 years, various vocal fans have been pushing for his exit. I think that's a good example of sort of what expectations can do, because when Brooks Reed was signed by the Falcons in 2015, he was like the first guy that they signed that free agency along with Justin Durant. He was the highest paid free agent they had. So I think he came to Atlanta with a lot of expectations, particularly for, at that time, a team that was starving for pass rush and playmakers on the defensive side of the ball coming off the heels of that 2014 season. And then he basically missed most of that season with a groin injury. And then in the games that he did play, didn't really make that much of an impact, and you know, struggled at times sort of setting the edge against the run and in coverage and all those various things. And I think a significant portion of our fan base basically turned on him at that point. And, you know, basically ever since then have been waiting for his exit from the team, because I think they still sort of hold a grudge against him from that time, despite the fact that I think if you were really paying attention towards the end of 2016, when Claiborne got hurt, he was the guy that really stepped into the Claiborne shoes and really aided the Falcons pass rush down the stretch, particularly that Seahawk playoff game. He made some impact plays in that game and arguably was the most valuable player on the defensive side of the ball in that game. And as well continued that into 2017 where, contrary to what some people may think, he was, you know, among the team's five best pass rushers. And you say, like, okay, like, what that does that mean, Aaron? Well, one player that wasn't among the five best pass rushers on the team in 2017 was none other than our good friend Vic Beasley. And so he outplayed Vic Beasley in 2017 as well as I think he did towards the tail end of 2016. And one of the reasons where I sort of became the Vic Beasley hater in the first place was in large part due to Brooks Reed, because I remember that Chargers game in 2016 where, you know, Vic Beasley had those two sacks, you know, one on a stunt and one off of a speed rush on Barksdale that led to a forced fumble that Claiborne recovered for a touchdown. And I remember coming out of that game, people were like, oh man, Vic Beasley played great in that game. And I remember watching the film of that game, particularly the second half of that game, and being like, Vic Beasley disappeared in the second half of the game. Once Joe Barksdale was able to time his fastball and realize, oh, this guy's just a speed rusher, and was able to time his fastball, he shut down Vic Beasley the rest of that game. And, you know, the Falcons were at, what, three or four scores at halftime and then blew that lead. And when you need a pass rush to get home, and meanwhile, Brooks Reed's lined up on the other side of defense, creating pressure against a higher-level left tackle. I don't think Okung was there yet in San Diego, but whoever the left tackle was, he was better than Joe Barksdale at the time. So that sort of was like the lightning rod moment for me. Was like, hey, this Vic Beasley dude is kind of overrated, despite all the hype that he's getting. And meanwhile, my boy Brooks Reed is out there, you know, doing the best that he can. And I think that thereafter, for the next year and a half, that continued to be the norm pretty consistently week to week. And so I don't think a lot of other fans came to realize that appreciation. And so continued to hate on Brooks Reed as they are wont to do. And, you know, didn't appreciate the time he was here. So I am definitely one that does appreciate the Brooks Reed time, the spin move, the hair, you know, that luxurious hair. And I hope he gets an opportunity to catch on and play a role for other teams, provide some veteran stability, add some ability in run support. He can still, you know, do some things in run support for a team. So I hope he gets that opportunity, as I hope all the players that the Falcons cut get opportunities, because, yeah, I'm a fan of these guys. I've been a fan of these guys for a long time. You know, even in a world where Mohamed Sanu gets cut, I hope he wish him the best. You know, it's 2 years too late, but yeah, I'll wish him the best. Oh, man. Oh, the shade is real. Okay, guys. There you have it, guys. There is my thoughts on the Matt Bryant, Brooks Reed cuts. You know, can we just wait? Just give me 2 weeks, Falcons, before you cut other guys so I can just catch up. You know, just give me some time to adjust. So there you have it, guys. If you have additional comments, I can't believe I forgot the pick six that Alford had against Washington as one of my favorite moments of his as well. So, you know, if you guys have some of your favorite Matt Bryant, Brooks Reed, Robert Alford, or whomever moments that you want to reminisce about with me, you can do so on Twitter, Locked On Falcons, Facebook, Locked On Falcons. The email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. You can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. And hopefully tomorrow we'll be back with an edge rusher preview. But, you know, fortunately the Falcons keep doing things. So, you know, if they cut Vic Beasley tomorrow, then I guess that edge rusher preview will just be like 15 minutes long. I know my bosses will be happy. So, we'll see how it goes. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.